Good morning, Valley Church. It's a pleasure to see all of you here. It's a lovely Canada Day weekend, and I'm wondering what are you guys doing in church this morning? Should be camping or doing something, but thanks for being here. Really appreciate that. And I think God's going to use this day especially to bless you and your family. My name is Joseph Dharmaraj. I did not attribute myself to board member and stuff like that. That's Marcel's field. It's not mine. Coffee Ministry, already mentioned the worship team. I've been here. The thing that I find very interesting about serving on the worship team is that my wife Mamta doesn't understand what I do on the worship team. Okay, I play the bass guitar for her. She says, "I see you on stage all the time moving around with this fancy guitar, but what do you do? I can't hear you." I said, "Dear, bass is the base for music itself, so it is something very important. Speak to the musicians." But she still thinks I hold a fancy guitar up there and I'm on show all the time, okay? So, moving on, could we have the next slide, Pondicherry? So, I grew up in a very small town in southern India, okay? I got that up there. The interesting part about this town is called Pondicherry. Interesting part about this town was when the rest of India was colonized by the British, we were colonized by the French. So as you can see there, that is the police uniform of Pondicherry to this day, a very French gendarmerie kind of style, and then you have Rue Dumas and Rue de la Casserine, and all those kind of names, it still exists. And so when Mamta and I went back to Quebec City, it brought back childhood memories to me because that's the kind of environment that I grew up in the rest of India, which was British. Very important to know this because what happened around this time is my mom, who's from a different part in India, moved to Pondicherry. That's where she met my dad. And so the interesting thing about India is many people think India, we are all Indians when we leave the country, but in India, it's like many countries put together. It's pretty much like Europe, like, so you can go to the Germans and tell them something about French culture, they might know it, but you can't expect the Germans to be French. So that's exactly what happens in India. So you could be crossing state borders, and you can just go in there and you can't read a single signage, you can't speak the language, you do not know what people's culture is, and that's pretty common in India. So when my mom moved from another province or another state to come and meet my dad, she comes from the Church of England, which is the Anglican Church, and my father was a Roman Catholic, so they both met in Pondicherry, decided to get married. So the importance of that is I grew up in a very strong culturally Christian home. I stress the word culturally Christian home because after my sharing of my testimony, you will know the difference between a cultural Christian home and a Christ-centered Christian home. It's slightly different. Yes, so having said that, my dad was the two Sunday a year kind of guy. Anybody wants to take a guess which are the two Sundays a year you need to go to church? Anybody? Easter and Christmas. Yeah, we have a lot of saved Catholics here. My mom was more the frequent person who used to go every Sunday to church just because of compulsion, because she was raised that way. And so, though I was baptized in the Roman Catholic Church, I was exposed to the Anglican Church, which was not fun at all. Because the interesting part was, I am always excited to see when the announcement for Sunday school happens here in our church, children are bolting much ahead of their parents there to get downstairs and get involved with Sunday school. It was almost similar in my case, but I was bolting the other way, trying to get out of church. Because Sunday school just meant an extension of school, which extended Sunday morning, which you had to memorize verses, you had tests to write, and then a little bit of embarrassment when you don't get it right. And you always had this kid who could memorize verses and was just on top of the class, and you're like, all the time sitting there looking at them. Like, yeah, you had that. So times 10, that would be the vacation Bible school. Has anybody been here to this church on vacation Bible school week? Yes, you must come and see that. I wish I was a child. I facilitated games with Marcel, Pastor Marcel for about 2 years. And man, this is a place. I wish I was a kid again. But that was just the opposite for me. We had 4 weeks of vacation in summer. And we would usually get about 2 weeks in vacation Bible school, which means my mom would drop me off at 9 in the morning and only pick me up at 5 in the evening. It's a whole day of memory verses and torture. That's all went on. Embarrassment and then getting bullied or bullying someone. That's what it was. And church-going kids can be very, very nasty. And I learned that quite early. And so, cut a long story short, I did a lot of things as long as a young person, just to please my mom to go to church. By the age 18, I had nothing to do with church. I said, forget it. And I got my relief because I had to go to another state, which is Bangalore city, which is the Silicon Valley of India today. I went to do hospitality management as education. It was just an excuse to get out of house. I was not passionate about working in the hospitality industry or something. I said, anything to get out of home and just to go and live in a dorm, live all by myself. So at the age of 18, I left home, all boys dorm. So I need to tell you, it was party all the time. Nothing else goes on there. I was part of a band too, so there was a gigging guy, and so I used to have gigs. And there was a lot of alcohol and a lot of drugs too. But the interesting part is, by the grace of God, I never tried drugs because I just saw the addictive nature of drugs. So didn't. But then we are learning about food and beverage management, so we got to taste the product before we sell it, right? So it's a justification for binge drinking and all those kind of things. Out of all that, education was secondary. But out of all that chaos, the only good thing I can think at the time that happened is I met my wife, Mamta, who was just 1 year junior to me in college. The interesting thing about that story is Mamta is not a person who falls in love or would fall in love. She was the person who probably would go for a guy who a dad would probably arrange to for her to get married, and she comes from a very traditional background like that. She's a North Indian Hindu. I'm a South Indian Christian. This is pretty much the plot in much of the Bollywood movies that they make. Okay? So I'm not kidding. I was just expecting her father to walk one day with a gun and just shoot me before I even proposed to her. So, but then, I'm very grateful for my in-laws. I mean, they just lovely people. They saw beyond the differences that we had, and we got married, and we graduated. We went on to find jobs. We moved back to Pondicherry, which is my hometown. We could move on to the next slide, if you don't mind. Yeah. So, the hometown, and we had good jobs. But there's always this longing for me that there's a bigger world out there. I need to go and explore this. So I had a friend of mine who was working in Singapore. He said, why don't you come visit me, see if there are any jobs available you could apply. So I moved to Singapore. I actually went as a tourist to Singapore, to be precise. And while I was looking for jobs, I just came back to the apartment, and my friend told me, like, hey, you know what? My company is hiring, but it's a much junior position. Do you want to get started there? I said, if I can stay back in Singapore and work, why not? Give it a shot, right? We applied for the permits, and then I got my work permit. And that's the story. I called Mamta. I said, I'm not coming back, dear. I found a job here. And so she was a little bit upset, but then she was living with my parents, and she was a lot more secure there. So I couldn't dislocate. By then, we had Varun, my first son. And so he was also there. So I didn't want to relocate them without my future being very uncertain in Singapore. I did not understand that in Singapore, when you get hired on a work permit, it's pretty much your employer's boss, and you have to be prepared to be exploited. So I used to work like 16 to 18 hour days for the next 2.5 years. But what happened out of that is, in that meantime, Mamta came to visit me once in Singapore, and she conceived Vikas, my second son, and so she went back. But I continued to stay on in Singapore. In the meantime, my job performance was so good. In 4 months, I was promoted to number 2 in the company. And so suddenly, all this power and authority in a country which I've just known for hardly a year just got to my head. And once that got to my head, my justification for working very hard was, I don't have my family here. I'm living all alone in a flat with a flatmate. The two of us used to just go around partying, drinking, and late nights, and the lifestyle that goes around with clubbing and stuff like that. That was the fun lifestyle I chose to. Nothing to do with God, nothing to do with church. God has completely disappeared in my life. I didn't have anything. I even had jokes like, I prefer going to hell because my friends are all going to be there. You know, those kind of things that you say. Yes, exactly. And that being the case, Mamta started to sense in India there was something changing in me. And so she insisted, when I went down for the delivery, when Vikas was born, when I went down to India, she just sensed a distance between us. It was not the same guy she knew while she was dating back in college. And so she sensed that and said, I think we have to live as a family. You need to take us over there or you come back. So I wasn't willing to come back, so I filed for a permanent residence, much to the dislike of my employer, Because once you get your permanent residence in Singapore, you're free of your employer. You're a resident, you can quit your job and find another job. So that was very disappointing to him. That being the case, he decided to get back at me. So the day Mamta, Varun, and Vikas were landing, Vikas was a three-month-old baby, Mamta, Varun was 5 years old, and while they were at the airport, when I was going to pick them up at the airport, my boss decided to fire me the previous day. So the morning I show up at the airport, I don't have a job. And I'm inviting my family into a new country. So that was quite the thing. And that stress was getting to me. I didn't tell Mamta for the next 3 months I was unemployed. I just pretended to go to work every day and wiped out whatever I'd saved up in the 2 years of working so hard. But I couldn't tell this lady who's come depending on me that I was unemployed, because the next thing is, let's go back. Why, what are we doing here, right? But what happened during that time is Mamta, the one I loved so much, she came back into my life and she was becoming a hindrance to the lifestyle I was leading. You know, the lifestyle was, I'm free, I was there, I loved my boys very, very much, but Mamta was being a hindrance. I came back to a flat where I could walk in completely drunk and not answer to anybody. Now, I can't do that. My old friends remain the same. And so this started creating a lot of rift in our marriage, and I hated coming back home. And as most men think when they work very hard, I provide for my family, I'm a good husband, I take care of my family so I can do what I want on the side. And that was the thinking that I had at the time. And this was going quite far, and if that had continued, I think we probably would have gone our separate ways. And I thank the Lord for that. That's when he had to throw a brick at me. It came in the form of a health scare. I was being treated for some kind of a infection that I had got. And antibiotics used to work. It used to suppress the infection, but it would come back once the antibiotic course was over. Back and forth for almost a year. They started testing me for something which could be malignant and even terminal. So that's what it was. Doctors told me, better get ready. We've been trying to beat this thing for almost a year. You're very young to acquire something like that. If you're this young and if it's thing, it could be an aggressive form of the disease, which means you don't have much time. That could be there. This came as a blow to me. Imagine this guy who's already got a job and established in a new country, and I'm full of myself in my head, and that's exactly what happened. So I was walking down, completely broken, beaten, angry with everything that has happened to me, and I just walked down, and as I was walking down, there was this church called the St. Andrew's Cathedral. If anybody's been to Singapore, it's right at City Hall. It's a cathedral, but it's an Anglican church. So you trace your steps back, right, to what you know. So I just walked there. It was 9 p.m. at night, and I was just walking past this church. The gates were open. 9 p.m., church gates should be locked, right? But the church gates were open. I think they were preparing for something on the inside, so the gates were open. I just strolled, and I can't even remember now, but I just strolled and sat on the bench. I never said anything. I didn't know how to pray. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know if there is a God that existed, because my situation was really bad. I just needed some peace and quiet. And I just remember looking up to the sky and say, if you're real, reveal yourself to me. And please, God, if it's in your... I didn't say if it's in your will. I was too proud for that. I probably said, give me a second chance. Give me a second chance to get this right. Nothing happened. People tell me once they say that, they have tingly feeling and they see a light coming down from heaven. All that never happened. It was very disappointing. Nothing happened. Nothing happened. I'm just walking back to the train and I'm going back, headed back home, and this is what I saw. And so once that happened, I went back home. Go back home and I'm picking a fight with Mamta. And it was really good. And around Valentine's Day, this was around Valentine's Day, I think in 1999, we were just having a very bad fight. And around Valentine's Day is our wedding anniversary. And Vikas's birthday is there, Varun's birthday. So February is a month of a lot of activity. And so Mamta and I found that we're fighting so much. Valentine's Day was on a Sunday. I said, let's at least go as a family to church. Maybe that will fix our problem. I was totally disgusted. I did not know. So I only knew St. Andrew's Cathedral now. I knew it's an Anglican church. I said, let's go back there. So we took the train, went there. And I'm marching with my family for the first time as a family into church, with the purpose of attending church. The usher meets me outside and said, hey, you guys new? I said, yes. Are you coming for service? Yes. I'm sorry, But the 9 o'clock service is Mandarin service. You guys understand Mandarin, you can come to the service. I'm like, I come to church with my family after almost 15, 20 years, and you guys are going to speak to me in Mandarin? I don't understand Mandarin. But then he said, you know what, we have a shuttle service that goes on. We have a new life service, and that happens at the Victoria Concert Hall. Now, Victoria Concert Hall in Singapore is where all the huge symphonies and operas and all that take place. So that was a fancy hall. I've never been there. There was a shuttle, that a free shuttle that could take us there. And so Mamta with Vikas in a stroller and Varun and myself, we all got into that bus and we went there. I never seen church service like that. I could not believe that was an Anglican church, because it was just like New Life service. It was not sit, stand, sing few hymns and go home. It was more like people were engaged. There was a worship team up there. The first time I'm seeing people raise their hands. You do that in an Anglican church, the ushers will come and take you out, right? The traditional Church of England kind of church, you know. So that happened, and I do not know what happened that day. Mamta had taken Vikas off for Sunday school. Varun was all by himself in another Sunday school for his age. And there was an altar call. I never heard of altar call before that. And I just walked completely sobbing, I know. And that was the day God transformed my life. He touched my life. What my experience was, when I was standing there in his presence, I could see the ugliness of myself. The ugliness that I just longing, like, Lord, I'm not worthy to be here. I know what it is. Now, I'm just unclean. I'm unworthy of your love. I'm unworthy of your grace. I'm unworthy of forgiveness. And that was revealed there that day. And that was quite the transformational experience I have had. Mamta's never seen, Indian men don't cry, okay? So Mamta's never seen me cry before. So we walking back, and she comes back from Sunday school, and she sees me all crying and sobbing sitting out there. I said, what happened to you? I said, I don't know. I just don't know what happened to me. Life started changing after that. So after Christ now. You change the slide to, yeah, receiving Christ, yeah. So life started changing after that. There was this thirst in me to get to know what who Christ was. I started, you know, the New Living Translation is probably the easiest English version of the Bible. Like, it's, you can go cover to cover, like just on a few bus trips, and you'll finish the New Testament. Anybody wants to be encouraged, you want to read the New Testament two or three times, try that. Very good translation, because I was just every day taking bus to work. I just used to read the Bible, the New Testament. I think I did that about three times, and that was it. That was the last time I've done it three times like that. Having said that, it started transforming my life. Subsequently, my behavior, I fell in love with Mamta again, I should say that. But now with Christ in my heart, and the transformation in me was so great. Remember, Mamta has practiced her Hindu faith. I never insisted that she should convert to Christianity. My mom, though she would have loved that, she loved her because she loved her so much, she didn't want to hurt her feelings. But Mamta saw me change so much that she started getting curious about Christ. And so we found a church, and then we started going back there. Slowly she started coming to Bible study and stuff like that. Meanwhile, I wanted to leave Singapore because I just felt God had revealed to me. I had very well established in Singapore. I became a Singapore citizen, and so I was accepted as part of the society. But I just felt there was one thing wrong that I did when I walked into that country. My employer wanted me so desperately that instead of filing me as a management staff, he filed me as a chef. Technically, it doesn't make much of a difference. It's the food and beverage industry. You could be a chef, you could be a manager. Sometimes chefs are managers. So they use that gray area. And I felt I had built my life in Singapore, very successful life, on a wrong. I wanted to make that right. So I just said, Lord, I pray to you, give me an opportunity to leave to another country, and this time I want to do everything right. So we applied for Australia, because there are only three countries that would take you, Australia, New Zealand, or Canada. Nobody else wants us. You know, it's very difficult to immigrate to any other country. So New Zealand, oh, too small. I didn't want to go there. I don't know. I'm sorry. If anybody is a Kiwi here, I apologize for that. Australia, okay, larger country, maybe got hope. And then I applied for Australia. We almost got our papers through. But they said, you got to go and do an English exam. IELTS or TOEFL or whatever. I said, you know what? I've been teaching, working with English all my life. You expect me? I wrote a huge letter saying, no, I'm not doing my English, your English. They wrote back to me another 3-page letter why I should do the English exam. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. They finally said, no, we can't accept you into Australia if you don't do the English exam. So my ego got the better of me. I said, I'm not doing the English exam. I don't need that country. Good thing that happened, right? Because I'm in Canada today. So I applied to Canada, to come to Canada. But then when they told me I had to do my English test, we ran and did the English test. So I'm not taking any more chances. Just do it. I don't care. Even if you want me to do a French test, I'll do it for you. I don't care. So we're that desperate. So what happened was, 18 months, folks, I'm not kidding, 18 months, I did not know where Canada was, never been to North America before, couldn't spell Vancouver right in my application for immigration, okay? And in 18 months, we got our medical. This is a funny story. 18 months, I got my medical, and I did not know where the Canadian High Commission was to get my passport stamped in Singapore. No, I just sent it all by mail. So I had to actually look it up. It was before the time of Google. So maps and stuff like this, so I had to look it up. Where is the Canadian High Commission? I've applied to go to Canada, but I do not know where the Canadian High Commission was in Singapore. So we got there, we came to this country. Within about 6 months of us landing here, we found Valley Church. And as a family, we all got baptized here. Okay, I got back. Thank you. The rest is, you know me after that. The coffee guy, the worship team guy, yeah, that's me. Okay, that's what it is. So my most important things, if you are a person who does not know Jesus Christ, if you are on the fence and thinking what Christ is, I just like to share my personal experience, the questions I get asked when people come talk to me about Christ, okay? Why only Jesus? Okay, I'm just going to spend some time there. I get this. So when I came to know Christ and I started building this relationship, these two verses stuck out predominantly to me. So the first one is, all of us know, John 3:16, which is of course, God so loved the world that he only gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him shall not perish but have eternal life. Right? So that verse came to me. I said, why should God sacrifice his Son, was the question I asked. Then the next thing that I found very interesting is Jesus saying, I'm the way, truth, and the way, and no one comes to the Father. I said, that's pretty deep, like it's so radical, it's so strong. I've never come across somebody say, no one but me. I mean, that is a lot of authority, a lot of empowerment. So these two verses started bothering me a lot and said, let's dig deeper. So it took me to one thing is God's standards. I need to understand God's standards. What am I being saved from? Why should God sacrifice his Son? God's standards. When I looked at, for example, I started getting, say, okay, let's look at God's standards. Let's look at the Ten Commandments. Most people know what the Ten Commandments is. I remember memorizing it sometime in Sunday school. So I didn't get all the ten correct, but I at least got maybe two or three right, right? So, you shall not steal. Okay, I said, I'm a good person. I don't steal. I pay my taxes. I do everything. And then God started revealing things to me like, how often is that when you are at work, you start surfing the internet for your own personal gains? And how often at work that you start surfing, checking your emails and your messages at the time? Is that not on your employer's dime that you're actually doing that? Is that not stealing? I'm like, oh my goodness, this standard is really high. Because thou shalt not steal is there, but we look at stealing as something else. And so that was really shocking to me. The next one, the next example is quite interesting. Most men will relate to that. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Most friends I meet, they'll say, oh, before marriage, it was a different guy. But after marriage, I'm like a one-woman man. I'm sincere to my wife and all that. And further down, if you go down in Matthew 5:28, I think Jesus mentions anyone who even looks as a man, a woman, and thinks lustfully in his mind has already committed sin. Like, already committed adultery. So what it revealed to me is God's standards are so high that it's not hard to keep. It's impossible to keep. So I saw that significance that I need a Savior. And the only person in all my search and everything that I looked at, there was no religious or spiritual leader who could actually claim, I am the way, the truth, and life. No one comes to the Father. Nobody had that authority. Nobody claimed. It's something that Christ has knowledge, the pre-present and foreknowledge. Only a person who comes from a place would be able to claim so much authority. I searched a lot, but could not find anybody who could take so much authority. That was convincing for me. And what it revealed to me is God's got his hand out there, 99% through Christ, and I just needed 1% to put my hand, to just hold on to it, and his grace and his power would save me. And all I need is, that's called free will. And I need to exercise my free will for just 1% for God to just get my hand and just pull me up. And so that was phenomenal that that revelation came to me. So that's one thing I tell people when they ask me, why only Jesus? The next question that they usually ask me is also this. You were raised in a Christian home, so you basically, your default pathway is when you have trouble, you run back that way. Okay? I married a Hindu. Mamta used to be a Hindu. I had no problem with that. I've actually done research of Hindu churches because as part of my master's program in tourism, I need to research all the temples. So I've been to various Hindu temples. I prayed. I know their customs. I used to almost become like them. There was one time I almost got killed in a road accident because I was just coming back from work and a truck actually missed a stop sign and just came right into me. The grill of the truck just braced the side of my shirt and I just avoided it and it was not even a bruise on my body. When that happened, Mamta and I attributed that saving to an idol that was close by, located in a park. And every Friday evening, we used to go and offer prayers to this idol, thinking that the idol is the one that saved my, preserved my husband's life. So I've dabbled with Hinduism. I've been exposed to Hinduism. Interesting story. When I went to Singapore, I had a friend who was a Taoist. So I started going to the Taoist temples. Yep. If anybody's from Singapore, you probably know Bugis Junction. Bugis Junction has a temple called Kuan Yin Temple, which is the goddess of mercy. I used to shake chopsticks and just throw it out and for the monks to come and tell me what my future is going to be. I used to light up joss sticks. I even been to the Taoist temple in another place where I used to give offerings for Taoism, for Taoist God. Interesting story. When I lost my job, my friend decided to take me to a Taoist medium, people who speak to the spirit world. This guy is blind. I walk into his house and pay him $20 for him to talk into my life. And suddenly he starts yelling in Hokkien, which is one of the dialects used in Singapore. It's a Chinese dialect. He started yelling in Hokkien, and I'm like looking at this, my friend, and saying, what's he saying? I don't understand what he's saying. You know what he said? He said, how dare you bring a Christian into my home? I didn't know Christ. I was not walking with Christ at the time. The only two reasons I can think about is as a kid, I used to go for a lot of evangelical rallies with my aunt. Maybe as a kid, I walked up to the altar and gave my life to Christ. I didn't know that while I was growing up. Or the second reason I can attribute to that is my mom continuously prayed for me. Mothers, prayers, work people. Trust me, if I'm doing this today, if somebody had told me 20 years ago I'll be doing this, I would say, take a hike, seriously. Mothers, prayers do work. I always encourage mothers to keep praying for your kids. Whatever the situation is, just keep praying for your children because it works. I'm a testimony of that. Okay, I'm the evidence for that. So don't stop praying for your children. So this can be the only two reasons. And that's when I realized that there is most things, the most important thing I realized from that is religions, the most of the religions that I practiced or tried to get involved with was about doing something. I need to do something. I need to be good. I need to do. With Christ, I realize it's done, done, done. Just accept it and move on. So Christianity was not the default path I had. It's a path that I had to choose consciously, though I had prior knowledge, but I just did my background and did my version of spirituality and trying to discover who God is, and that is what finally happened. The last point I have today is, so most people would come to me and say, so now that you believe in Jesus Christ, your troubles are all resolved. Your troubles are gone, and it's a brand new life. I have two verses for them, which spoke to me, but the Comforter, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father would send in my name, he shall teach you all things and bring to your remembrance all that I said unto you. And the second one, very important, peace I leave with you. I give unto you, not as the world gives you peace, but my peace I leave with you. And the peace that surpasses all understanding. The Bible tells us that. when I became a new Christian, the first thing I noticed is I used to meet people in church. They're going through a horrible time in their life. But they say, I'm suffering, I'm that, but praise God. God's in charge. God's in control. I found that sovereignty completely, how could they be like that? Go fix your problems. How can you completely rely on God and just say, He's sovereign and He's going to take it. Go do something about it. Right now, we have a friend of ours in the United States who moved to the U.S. with his wife for treatment for a son who had cerebral palsy. And the moment he landed there, the son got so sick, they couldn't leave the U.S. So they're stuck in the U.S. for almost 25 years now. They had a daughter in the time when they were in the U.S., and she's about 22 right now, and she's going blind in one eye. And just recently, just about a month ago, we just found out that our friend, the guy, the husband, the father, has got a very advanced form of bone marrow cancer of the spinal cord. And he's on stage 3. And you know what he did? When I spoke, when my wife, Mamta, called him to speak to him, he said, you know what? Praise Lord Jesus Christ. He's going to use my suffering for His glory. That's what he said. And that's the joy I found among Christians. Every Christian I met, that's what they said. I'm not suffering. I know God's going to use it for His purpose. And that gave me encouragement. And I said, trials in life are not going to go away. But I have a choice who I walk those trials with. I can walk it alone. I can walk it with Jesus Christ. It was a very clear choice for me, in front of me. And I chose to walk it with Jesus Christ. And I thank God for that. My life is not perfect. I still have certain issues I'm dealing with. But I know I have a Savior who's much stronger, who's conquered it all. And that gives me confidence to walk with Jesus. It's like when I have troubles, I always think we pull our troubles so close and we bring it so close to our eye that we don't see the sun. We can block out the sun with a single finger like that, right? So when we move it back, our troubles go back and you hand it over to Jesus, you see the glory of the sun, and that's how you see God. And that's the vision I got from God. So in closing, if you do not know Jesus Christ, and there's something about this story that has touched your heart, I would just say, give Jesus a chance. Just give Jesus a chance. No harm in trying. Just, you tried many things, just try Jesus. Let Him do the transforming work in your life, okay? And as I invite the worship team to come back, a few things I would like to say is, today you come here today, Pastor Marcel, myself, and Sister Gail, you're just going to be there, on the left there, after the service. So you're most welcome to come talk to us. It could be just that, hey, great testimony. I'd like to come and shake my hand. Fine. Or it could just be, tell me more about Pondicherry. I didn't know the French colonizer part of India. I'm happy to talk to you about that too. Or, I like this Jesus thing. Where do I get started? Or it could just be that you're just going through a very tough time in your life. You just need us to pray. Whatever it might be, just come by, just say hello to us, and we'll just be very happy to talk to you. Thank you for listening, and God bless you all.